Welcome back to the Puma Podcast. I'm Puma.
And I'm Tori.
Hey, we're glad you're joining us today.
Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, it's getting into summer. Yeah. So I'm honestly, well, should I say I'm not a fan of summer?
I mean, I think it's okay to say you're not a fan of heat.
Yeah,
I'm not,
you're right. I'm not a fan of being hot and sweaty. So that's what I'm not a fan of.
Yeah, it's been a very muggy June.
And I'm not a fan of mowing grass.
No.
And bugs. And I could have been a Canadian.
Mowing bugs, yeah.
Mowing bugs, yeah. Yeah. So here we are in June, and we, a couple weeks ago, started, you know, the summer looking at the heart of God in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And we've had many conversations with people, and maybe you've had the same thoughts. You'll read stuff in the Old Testament and say, man, that just sounds so mean and cruel and vindictive and harsh. And this caricature of God in the Old Testament seems to be one of anger, and the New Testament seems to be the God of love. At least that's kind of the character that people have.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely an idea that the God of the Old Testament is this old bearded guy in a cloud with a permanent frown on his face, right. And yet the God of the New Testament, you know, Jesus, he's all loving and kind, but the God of the Old Testament, like, he's the evil guy.
Right, he's the one that smites you and wants to just, you know, make your life miserable, and so.
Right.
Yeah, and I think we started looking, well, as far as, like, just this kind of new series, we looked at Exodus 34, and what's so fascinating about these verses is this is God revealing himself to us, and really revealing himself to Moses, because he said to Moses, he came down and stood next to, the Lord came and stood next to Moses and passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin, yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. God shares his character, his heart. He tells Moses, this is the kind of person that I am. You know, I'm gracious and compassionate. I'm slow to anger. I want to forgive sin, but I am also just, and I punish those that are guilty. But Moses, this is who I am, and you can count on me to be like this. This is who I am. This is what I do. My character will be seen in everything that I do. And so with that kind of a backdrop, we've been looking at and started to look at how do we see God's heart in the Old Testament and some of the different situations and Old Testament stories? And really, we want to see God for who he really is, not the caricature that our world and even sometimes in the church it may about to be.
Yeah. No, that's good, Puma. Yeah, I'm excited to dive in a little bit deeper. And even so, today's podcast is going over a little bit of kind of context to last week's. It's really kind of diving into what kind of set up that whole, you know, Exodus 34, where God reveals himself.
Yeah, we want to just kind of look at the events leading up to God revealing his heart to Moses there. So,
yeah. Well, hey, let's dive into the heart of God in the Old Testament. All right, Puma. So here we are in Exodus 32. And we read this a little bit before this podcast, and it's amazing, you know, to see not just what God says about himself, but what he does to back up and to kind of validate everything he said he was. But yeah, let's read this section here, because
I just want to read a verse. You know, people read this and they think, huh, that just sounds so bad. It says, then he said to them, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Each man strap a sword to his side, go back and forth through the camp from one end to the other, each killing his brother and his friend and his neighbor. The Levites did as Moses commanded, and that day about 3,000 people died.
Wow.
You know, we read that, and it's so easy just to take that one verse, and we just read it, and we have this, like, modern reaction to that, like, oh, I can't see this. See, this is why we should run from God, not run to him. And I would say that, you know, the context here is more and more reason to run to God. You see, we always have a choice. We're either running to God or we're running away from him. He's either someone that we want to get to know more or somebody that we want to avoid more or get to know less. Right. And so this caricature of the Old Testament. So he basically told the Levites, I want you guys to go and run through the camp, and I want you to kill your brothers and whoever.
Right, which is crazy because, I mean, one, God telling you to kill your brothers. I mean, like that seems super out of context and for right. the character of God. You know, but this is right when the Moses has gone up on Mount Sinai for 40 days, right? And they're already starting to doubt Yahweh, who just delivered them from Egypt, which is crazy. But they're already beginning to doubt, right? And the classic, well, golden calf story.
Yeah. Yeah, let's back up the train. Well, let's back up the train like over a year.
Okay.
Yeah, back up the train over a year. Yep, there you go. Yeah, over a year earlier, you had... You know, the people, you know, God's people down in Egypt, and they were being oppressed and they were being abused, and they were crying out, God, do you even care about us? Mm. And early in Exodus, we read that God heard their cries and heard their misery and spoke to Moses, said, Moses, I want you to go deliver my people. Mm. I care about them. I've heard them. And back then, when Moses gave that message to them, they believed Moses, that God had heard them, and they worshiped God. And so for the next year or so, the people of Israel, God's people, they witnessed the mighty power and hand of God against Egypt and all of Egypt's gods, all the plagues, which resulted in the final plague was the killing of the firstborn. Mm. And most of us maybe are familiar with that story, you know, as they left Egypt. And it says that God even caused the Egyptians to favor the people of Israel by giving them all their gold and silver and all their stuff. And so so you got... You know, 1+ million, 2 million people leaving Egypt with all of their gold and everything.
Yeah.
Well, what happens? Pharaoh is like, "Oh, I can't believe what we did." And most of us are familiar of the story of the crossing of the Red Sea, and God miraculously parts the waters, and you have Israel walking across on dry ground. You know, all the people, they get to the other side, God closes up the water just as Pharaoh and his army are in there, and it says the whole army drowned. And at the end of Exodus 14, it's just an interesting thing where Israel is on the other shore, and it says they're washing they're seeing the bodies of the dead Egyptian soldiers washing up on shore.
Yeah.
And all they can do, chapter 15 of Exodus, is worship that God is majestic in holiness. This is our God. And so from there, God leads them for several weeks to Mount Sinai, and they gripe and they complain and they do all the, you know, all kind right. of, you know, all this stuff. And God, you know, gives them, you know, manna and, you know, all these other things. And so they get to Mount Sinai, and chapter 19 of Exodus, basically God says, this is, you know, what's going to happen. You know, I'm going to descend upon this mountain. The mountain shook. It was on fire. The people heard the audible voice of God. Oh. I mean, can you imagine that? And then chapter 20 of Exodus, the Ten Commandments. So you skip ahead, you know, a few chapters. You get to chapter 24. And this is interesting. Moses and Joshua, and you have a couple of the leaders. You have Nadab, Abihu, and you have 70+ leaders of Israel are invited up onto the mountain. And this is what it says. Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 elders of Israel went up and saw the God of Israel. Under his feet was something like pavement made of sapphire, clear as the sky itself. But God did not raise his hand against these leaders of the Israelites. They saw God, and they ate and drank.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
I mean, God.
So you have not just Moses, but you have the leaders of Israel.
Wow.
All right? So then Moses went up on the mountain, and the glory of the, you know, shone. God said, Moses, I want you to come up here. And Moses went up on the mountain, and he says to the leaders, you know, you guys stay here and you wait for me until I come back down from the mountain. And so it says he went up for 40 days and 40 nights. So you have all the leaders of Israel, you have Aaron and everybody, they see the Lord. I don't know even know what that would look like.
Yeah.
Right? So they saw him and they experienced him. These are the leaders of Israel. And Moses continues up the mountain, and a cloud envelops it. And Moses says, listen, guys, wait here until I come back down.
Mm.
And it says Moses up there for 40 days and 40 nights. So now we get to chapter 32.
Yeah.
So between chapter 24 and 32, you have Moses and God's telling Moses all kinds of stuff. So chapter 32 begins, when the people saw that Moses was so long coming down from the mountain, they gathered Aaron and said, come and make gods who will go before us. For this fellow Moses brought us out of Egypt, and we don't know what happened to him.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, to get a picture of this, there's what? Hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Israelites who have left Egypt. The leaders of all just previous chapters gone up to the mountain, seen God, had an experience with God. And 40 days later, the people are grumbling and the leaders, what? Did they rebuke Israel? I mean,
yeah. So like 40 days later, basically they had if you want to use like a picture like today, 40 days earlier, they basically had the marriage ceremony between God and the nation of Israel at Mount Sinai. When God, you know, shook the mountain and God spoke, he made a covenant with the nation. He said, I am your God. I promised to your forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and now here you are. I am your God. You'll be my people. And they said, we will do whatever we want to be your people. So they basically said, yeah, we're your people. They made this, in a sense, this covenant relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so now 40 days later, they're like, well, where's Moses and where's God? We haven't heard from God for 40 days. It's interesting because it takes about 40 days for habit to form. So for 40 days, they didn't hear from God. And after 40 days, what's the assumption?
God left us. He lied. Left us. Yeah, yeah. He's gone.
He left us. Wow. And the leaders, you know, literally met the Lord up on the mountain. And 40 days later, the people, and really when it says the people, the implication there, it's also the leaders, right? Because the leaders are leading the people.
Right. Well, we see that in what they did next.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron saw the Lord. Yeah. And yet Aaron is the one, you know, helping facilitate this. And so what do? They make the golden calf.
Yeah.
Right? They make the golden calf. They make an idol cast in the shape of a calf and said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of Egypt. When they built an altar and they said, tomorrow we'll hold a festival to the Lord. So they weren't saying these are the gods of Egypt. They were saying this represents Yahweh.
Yeah.
Right? So they, and what was it? What did they just hear? The Ten Commandments? Make no graven image. I mean, like 40 days earlier, don't, right?
Right.
And so this is what they did. They made this golden calf and they said, here, this represents Yahweh. This is our God that brought us out of Egypt. And this is the God that's going to go before us.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And it says that not only that, but they sacrificed burnt offerings and they drank and they got up to indulge in revelry. So, you know, that's really the nice way of saying it. Basically, they had kind of a perverted sexual religious orgy, just like they would do in Egypt and just like the people of Canaan.
Wow.
So much so that, you know, the Lord says to Moses, go down because your people, whom you brought out of Egypt, have become corrupt. They have been quick to turn away from what I commanded them and have made themselves an idol cast in the shape of a calf. They have bowed down to it and sacrificed to it and have said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. God says these are a stiff-necked people. They are a people who are evil. Now, you're married.
Yeah.
I'm married. Mm-hmm. How would you feel if 40 days after your wedding day, you come home and you find, you know, your spouse in the arms
else.
In the bed with someone else?
I'd be livid. I'd be so hurt. My heart, I mean, it'd be both anger and great sadness. I mean, to think that the person that we've, you know, gone through premarital counseling with and all like the history we've had up to that point, to then be married, to just so quickly turn around. I mean, the questions I would have, the emotional, like, I can't trust you ever again. I mean, if this is 40 days in and this is what's happening.
Right. This is how we're starting.
Yeah.
Off. I mean, what kind of relationship?
Zero trust.
See, when God says, this is my heart, that I am gracious and compassionate, he's not saying, yeah, this is for me to for you to observe me from afar. This is who I am in relationship with you.
Yeah,
I am gracious with you. I'm compassionate with you. I'm slow to anger. I mean, it's a relationship that he has with his people, and you could say it's a relationship that he has and wants and desires for you and me through faith in Jesus. And so it's through this relationship. And so when God punishes them, and so he says then to the Levites, right, I want you to go through the camp, you know, anyone who's on the Lord's side, who sees that this is a perversion and this is an evil. We do not want this evil to spread. We do not want this to be the tone and nature and character of this relationship. And so we're going to purge that.
You know, it's amazing to me why God would even do that. Because if I were God, Yahweh did so much more than I ever could do for my life.
Right, yeah. You know? Our illustrations pale in comparison. Right. But for us to feel a little bit of maybe what's going on through the heart of God, yes.
But then you exaggerate that to, I mean, it would be, I wouldn't divorce my wife, but there would be so much, it would be very hard to trust and to love my wife the way I used to after that. Why did God not wipe them out? Like, I mean, the offense was so much greater to Yahweh. I can't imagine after all he's done, 40 days later, they're like, you know what? Forget the the first, second commandment, right? I mean, instead of destroying them, God like purges. Like, what's up with that?
Yeah. I mean, does he have a right to be angry?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is his anger because he's a mean, vindictive person?
No. It's just.
He's angry because he's loving and just. And sometimes love has to limit, right? Sometimes love has to put limits for the betterment of the other person. You see, in a relationship, you can't let sin and evil just run wild, right? Because that sin destroys relationships. And God loves his people so much that he wants them to be holy and pure. He wants them to want him more than anything. He wants them to run to him, not away from him. The golden calf was running away from him just 40 days, and how quickly they forgot. And so, again, they're so early as a nation that they are learning what it means to be in a relationship with Yahweh, with their God. And for you and I, we're tempted every day to run away from God. I mean, last week we looked at Genesis chapter, 2 and 3, and just how quickly it is to be deceived or to doubt God's goodness, doubt God's heart. Mm-hmm. You know, we're tempted to do that every single day. I don't need 40 days for that, even like 40 minutes.
Right. It's interesting that for God to tell Israel, hey, go purge the evil from among you, even your own family, that was an act of grace and mercy because he could have done away with all of them, but he thought Israel was worth loving and worth protecting. You know, like you mentioned before the podcast, just like, you know, how cancer, it's evil, it destroys. Is it unloving to cut out the cancer from someone to protect the overall body?
Right.
It is. And it's painful and it might be hard, but love protects. And sometimes love protects by destroying the evil.
Mm-hmm. And we think of sin and evil in our world just as a thing, but our whole world revolves around relationships. You and I and everyone listening, we're in families, we're in, some are married, we have brothers and sisters, we're in a community, we have coworkers, we have neighbors, we have relationships with people, and it is sin that destroys relationships. This is why sin is so evil. You know, the original sin, it destroyed the relationship between God and Adam and Eve, and sin is what separates you and I from the God who knows us and loves us. And so this is the heart of God. From the very beginning of the Bible and in the Old Testament, that he is a God who is gracious, is compassionate toward people. He is slow to anger. He's abounding in love. He wants to forgive sin, wickedness, and rebellion is what he says. And yet he has to punish sin. He's just. And so this is his heart. And we need to see, when we read through the Old Testament, we need to see this heart in everything that we read. Because if we read and just kind of cherry pick certain verses out and not see the heart of God behind his love for people, his desire to get rid of sin, the fact that he doesn't wipe people out instantly. I mean, we looked at last week, the consequence of sin is death. And yet Adam and Eve were allowed to live after they sinned.
Yeah.
Right?
It's an act of mercy.
They eventually, physically died, but God was merciful to them. And here with Israel, he's like, he made a promise to them, a relational promise to marry, in a sense, marry them. And he is not going to give up on his end.
Yeah. Yeah, Israel was worth fighting for. Israel was worth protecting and purging the evil from among them because God loved Israel. Yeah, to command the Levites to kill those who were helping the rest of Israel to rebel was an act of mercy.
Right. Well, we think of, for you and I, and even like our question for today, how has God loved us or shown his heart to you? And has there been times like in your life or my life that he's had to take something away out of love?
yeah.
that caused you to maybe want to run away from him and accuse him of not being loving. But in hindsight, you're like, you know what? That was really better for me. Mm. You know, is there like, you know, something that God stopped you from that basically protected you?
Yeah, no, that's a great, yeah, good AQ is how has God loved us, perhaps even taken things away from us because of that love, and how do we respond, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of things, you know, in our life. I hurt my arm playing baseball, wanted to play baseball, hurt my arm, was mad at God. I was in a church in Indiana, didn't go the way I expected. People didn't respond the way I did. I was mad at God. By hindsight, I see how God was using those situations to steer me to where I am today, to protect me, to bring me in contact with people that were like, you know, good for me. I mean, there's all kinds of things we can look at in our life.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, let's appreciate what God does, whether we feel good in the moment or not, because God is a God of love, and He loves us enough to purge evil from us. No, that's awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in again, another episode with us on the Puma Podcast. If you have any questions, we would love to hear from you guys at thepumapodcast@gmail.com. Thank you guys for joining us. We just really do appreciate you guys joining us and following with us on this journey as we learn to better love and understand the heart of God, especially in the Old Testament. So we'll see you next week. Fridays at 10:10.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.